all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday, June 7th, National Chocolate Ice Cream Day, in case you're tracking that kind of thing. Coming up this hour, we will talk to Congressman Mark Pocan in just moments. Then at the bottom of the hour, State Assembly Rep. Tip McGuire, a member of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, with an update on the state budget. And with that, let me turn our attention to Congressman Mark Pocan, who joins us now. Congressman, nice to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us again on Up North News Radio.
I'm glad to be here, Pat.
Let's start with the most frequent, most important thing that has been worked on recently by Congress, and that, of course, would be the debt limit deal. Later, we're going to get into the talk about, you know, maybe banning TikTok. We'll talk about Pride Month, a few other topics here as well. But the debt limit deal was the main thing. It was one of those moments where there were people on the left, such as yourself, and people on the right, such as Congressman Tom Tiffany, who voted against what ultimately passed. I'm pretty much guessing for very distinct reasons. So why don't you tell me first your own impression of the final agreement and then your vote against it?
Sure. Well, first of all, I mean, we should have had to have an agreement, period. For 86 times, I think it is, in our country's history, we lifted the debt ceiling for a period of time. When you appropriated funds, it automatically lifted. That was changed in about 2011 when John Boehner was around. That's why we're back to this weird dance again. Three times we lifted it under President Trump. I mean, it's the analogy, Pat, is that if you sign a mortgage, you don't get to decide whether every month you're going to mail the check, right? Because if you don't pay your mortgage, you lose your home and you destroy your credit. It's no different for the United States. So we shouldn't have even been in the position that we had to negotiate anything, much less the budget, environmental law, go down the list, a whole bunch of other things that, you know, the Republicans basically took hostages for in order to do this. Having said that, my biggest complaint was, as a member of the Appropriations Committee, not everything that was promised was in the bill, in particular $58 billion for non-defense discretionary spending. So Republicans were claiming that they've got it down to 22 levels of funding, which for 2 months, Democrats have been railing against would be a 22% cut to programs like Meals on Wheels and veterans, et cetera. They did add about $13 billion from the 22 levels, but that left a $58 billion gap. That's not in the bill. It's in a side agreement, which, by the way, we can't read. We don't have a side agreement to read on that. So as an appropriator, I am hoping on hopes and wishes, kind of like Wimpy, gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today, that $58 billion will be there. And I did ask the White House how they guarantee a side deal that's not in the actual vote would be there. And unfortunately, the answer was, well, the House may not put it in their budget. We'll have to find out, but we'll try to make sure the Senate does. So my problem was much of the agreement, especially the part that I deal with as an appropriator in my day-to-day basis, isn't in the bill. And if it's not in the bill, and if it doesn't become a reality, that means cuts, severe cuts to things like Meals on Wheels and healthcare, education, housing, et cetera. And since that is my, when you're an appropriator, that's your main and only committee you have. That's the stuff I care about the most in serving on the Labor, Health, Human Services and Education Subcommittee. Those are all programs that likely would be greatly affected. So for me, it was, I couldn't see the guarantee there. On top of that, when we are writing budgets again that aren't part of this agreement in 26, the baseline budget will be that 22 level budget plus $13 billion, which means we'll be about 30-35% down from where defense spending will be, which was left untouched. And it will be very hard to then fund those very programs that I think people in Wisconsin really count on. So for me, for very wonky but very important reasons around the priorities of that money was why I voted against it.
Well, look, the fact of the matter is that the amount of trust across the aisle was never great to begin with.
Right.
And so I don't think a lot of folks would fault you for thinking that maybe you'd like to see even more in writing. And so that makes complete sense from the standpoint of somebody who's on the Appropriations Committee of, you know, do you trust the handshake agreements? Having said that, though, where are your thoughts on President Biden at reaching an agreement with Speaker McCarthy and the compliments that he paid him? was that, you know, statesmanship that involves a level of trust that comes with the presidency? Or is it more like some of his critics saying that he should have gotten more in writing and he got played and things like that? What's your own assessment of the how the president performed in this?
Yeah, so everything I saw in the polls, if we didn't lift the debt ceiling and we had an economic collapse, then it would have been very dire if that would have happened. That's why the Republicans were really playing this game of chicken. Was a very dangerous game. The president would have got blamed, not Kevin McCarthy, not the House Republicans. It would have been the president. So this was important for the president to get done for a lot of reasons. The problem is, again, I don't vote on side agreements. We don't get a chance to do that. I vote on bills. And if the language isn't in a bill in front of me, I don't do my constituents, I think, a service by voting on something that I hope and wish will happen. I vote on bills. But the president, I think, you know, believes he has a good faith agreement. My only concern is, as you just said, you know, Kevin McCarthy is the least speaker-like speaker we've had since I've been here, because he gave away all of his powers in order to have that name on a business card earlier this year. And if he can't hold his rather crazy caucus together, then, you know, $58 billion of programs for seniors and veterans and, you know, kids needing, you know, lunches, you know, all of those things are going to be the ones that don't happen. So I think the president did it based on good faith, like you normally would have with people. I just think I know these people maybe a little more, having watched them, and I'm not sure if I would trust them in the same way. I hope the president's right.
More with Congressman Mark Bocan after this break, and a check on weather. You're up north. Joey Weimer hit the game-winning single in the 10th inning to lift the Milwaukee Brewers to a 4-3 victory over the Baltimore Orioles on Tuesday night. Time for our weatherology forecast. Meteorologist Michael Cairo joins us now to tell us how things are looking all across the state of Wisconsin. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, and it's going to be a very nice couple of days coming up as cool Canadian high pressure looks to build in from the north, keeping us very comfortable temperature and humidity-wise as well. Seeing a few spotty light showers and sprinkles exiting far southwestern portions of the state as we speak, especially in areas to the south of about Richland Center down through Dodgeville and Monroe, but even that activity should be exiting over the next hour or two, giving us a dry forecast across pretty much all of the remainder of the state here for today. Some lingering clouds across the western half of Wisconsin, even though should clear out by this afternoon, giving us a good deal of sunshine and looking very comfortable temperature-wise, middle to upper 70s pretty much for all of the state, except some of those locations right along the Lake Michigan shoreline will stick closer to the upper 60s to lower 70s by this afternoon. And for tonight, expecting partly cloudy skies. Those overnight low temperatures, pretty chilly across the far north. Rhinelander could even flirt with some upper 30s out there for tonight, but much of the remainder of the state in the upper 40s to lower 50-degree range. And Thursday, pretty much a carbon copy of today, looking for a good deal of sunshine statewide and still comfortable humidity-wise, middle to upper 70s for high temperatures there for tomorrow. By the time we get to your Friday, though, a weak cold frontal boundary beginning to approach from the northwest does bring a slight chance for some isolated showers and storms by the afternoon for areas like Amory, Baldwin, over to near Eau Claire, as well as Park Falls. The remainder of the state, though, is looking to stay dry yet. A couple of degrees warmer there on Friday, could approach some lower 80s for high temperatures for Madison, over to near La Crosse, as well as Eau Claire. Still some 70s for eastern portions of the state. Saturday, we'll be dodging some scattered showers and storms pretty much for all the state of Wisconsin. Definitely could use the rain across the region. Those fire dangers starting to tick up into the high category here for today. So fingers crossed we do at least pick up some measurable rainfall there. But again, kind of bad timing for the start of your weekend. I think as far as your Sunday forecast, though, the bulk of that rain a chance mainly across southeastern portions of the state. Much of the remainder looking to dry things out there for Sunday. And we'll ease back to some 70s for highs to wrap up your weekend.
All right, meteorologist Michael Cairo. Michael, thank you. Have a great day. And we're back now with Congressman Mark Pocan about the debt ceiling. Would you support preemptive action to eliminate this step in the future? There was talk about the 14th Amendment or minting a trillion-dollar coin, or, you know, where are your thoughts on whether this kind of disagreement should even exist in the first place?
Yeah, this is one of the dumb ideas that can only come out of Washington, D.C., is to keep this. It was created in 1917 when Congress wanted to put a check on how much we were investing in World War I. So they put a limit. And now we're still living with something a century later that doesn't necessarily have any of the original reasons. So my first session, I was on the budget committee, and back then I said this was something stupid because, like that mortgage analogy, you don't get to make that decision after you've agreed to spend money whether or not you're going to mail the checks. So absolutely, I would also support exploration of the 14th Amendment. I would support exploration of a $1 trillion coin, whatever. This doesn't stop spending, right? This only lifts the debt ceiling to match the spending you had. And I think the spin Republicans put out there was pretty effective in convincing people that it's something it wasn't, because, I mean, let's face it, they're better at lying. And they did a pretty good job in doing that.
Let's turn our attention now to members of Congress, amongst others, who have been targeting the social platform TikTok, which has in some kind of paperwork, corporate convoluted way, Chinese ownership. And I think in my mind, that's probably what has attracted attention more than anything else. But when we're talking about a social platform that may have some foreign ownership and Americans putting their data on there, there are people who would like to see either it curtailed or banned outright. When you do hear from constituents that maybe ask you to support a ban or what you think about it, what do you tell them?
Yeah, so the vast majority of people who reach out to us in my district don't want a ban on TikTok. I mean, let's face it, 150 million people in the country are on TikTok. That's a lot of people. But what should happen is on every single social media platform, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we should have data privacy, and we shouldn't allow them just to take our data and sell it to anyone. There should be greater regulation over that. And that's what I'm for. But simply banning a platform, and you're exactly right, it's the rhetoric of, oh, it's a Chinese company. Well, you know, does that mean we're not going to buy iPhones anymore, or laptops made in China, or most everything that's made in China? Again, that's not being proposed. And yet, as you know, Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin is the chair of a committee right now to talk about the U.S. and not in China, but in the Chinese Communist Party, right? Because that's how you keep defense budgets up, is by having an enemy, and we got to have someone that we're afraid of. And right now, Vladimir Putin's kind of BFFs with Donald Trump. So we're not allowed to look at the Soviet Union, even though they've invaded a sovereign country like Ukraine with a negative light. But China is the current enemy that we have to keep paying defense contractors lots and lots of money to buy more and more weapons that may work or may not. There's a lot of that that's part of this discussion that goes beyond the issue that I think we should talk about, which is just protect our data, period, across all social media platforms.
Well, and it always seems to me, and folks, I think, have long since forgotten about this, but, you know, there are social media companies here at home that probably deserve greater scrutiny. You think of Facebook and Cambridge Analytica and the role, to the degree that that helped, you know, Donald Trump do targeting or helped other, you know, foreign bodies target voters in 2016. It certainly seems there's more that could be done in terms of Americans' data privacy there than something where people are dancing on a video.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, TikTok is known for what? Yeah, it depends when, but I remember a few months ago when the Wednesday dance was like every video that popped up. You know, it depends what you watch is what you get. But I don't know if that's going to bring down the country. You know, it was the rhetoric. And then that awful hearing where you saw members of Congress showing their lack of knowledge about technology that was just cringeworthy. You know, we used to have a nonpartisan agency that advised us on technology pre-Newt Gingrich, and he got rid of it. We desperately need that again, because no offense to my colleagues, but many of them are in their 70s and 80s, and they're not exactly rip-roaring through social media to understand it enough, and yet they're governing it. And you know, I do think that disconnect causes a lot of problems.
You mentioned Congressman Gallagher from up in Green Bay. It reminds me that one of your newer colleagues, Congressman Derek Van Orden from the 3rd Congressional District, is on the Agriculture Committee, and they're working on a new farm bill. And while that's away from your Appropriations Committee, it is a bill that involves a massive amount of spending. So just from your overview, distant from the Ag Committee, but you know what Congressman Van Orden is going to be working on, do you hear anything that gives you reason to think that this is going to be a bill that in a divided Congress is going to get done and done well for Wisconsin farmers?
Well, we have to get it done, right? I mean, you have to have that. So I am worried, because this Congress has a lot of problems passing bills. That's why this week we're dealing with gas stoves after the national debt ceiling, rather than actually dealing with, you know, things that are important to the country. So Hakeem Jeffries appointed a special group to kind of work on the farm bill outside of the agricultural committee. And he asked me to be on that. So I think there's nine of us on a task force on this. So I'm going to be dealing with that along with Sharice Davids representing the Midwest, as well as other members around the country. You know, it's a unique bill. You know, part of it is things like supplemental nutrition assistance program for people more, you could argue, in the urban areas. And then there's the traditional agricultural parts that are for people more in the rural areas. But part of the magic of the bill is those are combined to make sure you have enough votes across all of Congress and both parties to pass a farm bill. If they decide to be the opposite of, I guess, what is woke by their definition, and put a bunch of poison pills in there, it's going to be hard to see that go forward. So I would hope that everyone realizes, you know, food is the least partisan thing I can think of, and we need to treat it that way. We have to respect, especially family farmers that we have a lot of in Wisconsin versus the corporate farmers. And I think that's an important priority. But we also got to realize that programs like SNAP are probably the number one program that keep kids out of poverty in this country. And at $6 a day, no one is living large off the amount of money they're getting with food assistance. And I think if we take it all into perspective properly, hopefully we can get a bill to come out.
Congressman, I know you noted the manufactured outrage about gas stoves, but I have to bring you up to date that one of your other colleagues, Congressman Tom Tiffany, has been going after the potential targeting of chocolate milk in our schools by the USDA. I mean, we've got to be mad about something always. And it's chocolate
milk. Every member of Congress from Wisconsin is advocating to make sure that we're allowing dairy in schools. Only Tom Tiffany can screw it up as much as he is, because he's trying to make it so partisan that he's trying to, you know, sometimes things like milk aren't as partisan as you think. Seriously, screwing up an issue that could affect a lot of people in Wisconsin because he wants to, you know, win a potential primary to maybe run for the U.S. Senate. And, you know, I hope he will focus on dairy as opposed to his derriere.
You know, when we talk about manufactured outrage, though, and I want to end on Pride Month, because, again, there are some people that they feel like they always have to be angry at something. Somebody has to be the them. And we talked to, you know, State Assembly Rep Lee Snodgrass yesterday about the importance of having something like Pride Month and allowing love to be, shall we say, a bit more assertive in its messaging. I would guess you agree that that's as essential, not just during a Pride Month, but all year round, given what the environment is like out there these days.
Yes, you know, this is one where there was a great article about 2 months ago in the New York Times that folks in the conservative political element of the Republican Party were throwing spaghetti against the wall, literally. What's the next issue to enrage people? And what they found is, and we had this happen to the gay and lesbian community a couple decades ago, is not everyone knows someone who's transgender. It used to be not everyone knew someone who's gay or lesbian. So they were passing all those marriage bills, remember, defining marriage between a man and a woman, and now marriage equality is 70%+ support across the country. The same is true right now. They're doing this against trans people, especially trans kids, because they don't know someone. And, you know, I think the best telling example of this was in Utah. The Republican governor vetoed a bill that said trans girls couldn't participate in sports. And he did it for a lot of equality reasons, but he also shared the statistics in Utah. There are, out of all the kids in school in Utah, there are 4 trans kids, 1 trans girl that was playing in sports. So you all these legislatures passing laws essentially are completely manufacturing an issue to scare people rather than you know, really take on the important issues of the day. And this article talked about that, you know, throwing the spaghetti on the wall, finding that next political issue. So, you know, fortunately, Wisconsin was the first state in the nation to have a gay and lesbian civil rights bill, 1982, by the way, signed by a Republican governor, Lee Sherman Dreyfus, before the issue was politicized. And I think, you know, we will probably keep much of that tradition through this. Because believe it or not, the Wisconsin legislature has introduced far fewer of these bills than a lot of other states. And, you know, hopefully this is just their most recent way of getting the base to be excited in the Republican Party. Certain elements, I really should say. It's not even the Republican Party. It's very small elements. And once we get past this and they realize they may know someone who's transgender, or they get the chance to see what these bills are really about, that's when Republican governors start to veto stuff like this. And I think more people will understand that treating people equally is really the value that we should all have.
Amen to that. Congressman Mark Pocan, thanks for spending time with us today.
Of course. Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it.
State Representative Chip McGuire coming up next. You're up north. Welcome back. It is 7:33, and a reminder, as always, that you can catch us not just on Civic Media radio stations across the state and more stations as of this week, but you can also catch live video feeds of this on Facebook and Twitter, and now on the Up North News YouTube page as well. And when you do any of that, you get to hear the prattling that goes on during the commercial breaks, including between myself and my next guest here, State Representative Chip McGuire from Kenosha, who's a member of the Joint Finance Committee. Representative McGuire, nice to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, and we appreciate what you do.
Well, we appreciate your willingness to serve on a committee where you're outnumbered 12-4 by Republicans, and so a lot of it is performative, unfortunately, as they steamroll whatever it is that they want to do. But somebody has to be there, representing what is most likely the majority will of people in Wisconsin. And as we were talking off air to get set to give people an update on the state budget and what Republicans are doing or not doing with a record surplus, you let me know that one of the emerging themes here is, we talk a lot about, should we pave the road? Should we support schools? What should we do with tax rates and things like that? But there is something here that is extremely meat and potatoes about the state budget that's not getting done. And it's multiple things that would help with the Wisconsin workforce, especially at a time with a labor shortage and where other states, we're competing with other states for the best and brightest. What are some of the things that you're seeing in the Joint Finance Committee that give you reason for concern under the category of Wisconsin's workforce?
Yeah, so, I appreciate you bringing that up. This emerging trend, this is something that we hear on the news. We've been hearing from politicians of every stripe for months now, is that workforce is so essential. And for a state like Wisconsin, we're actually, unfortunately, an aging state at this point. We aren't birthing people fast enough, essentially, to fill gaps in our workforce. And our economy is growing. We have the lowest unemployment that we've ever had in our history, for several months running here. And so what we really have to do is be attracting people to the workforce and making sure that, we have the tools to help people join the workforce. And unfortunately, they simply have refused to invest in those things. They lowballed the technical colleges in their budget. They recently, cut the engineering building from the building commission's budget, which would have provided hundreds of new engineers over the next few years. And they refuse to do paid family leave, which we believe will attract more families to the state. And I'm concerned that as we come up on other issues that are essential to the workforce, like childcare, childcare providers are the workforce behind the workforce, and they're struggling to find workers. And Governor Evers provided a significant investment during the past year using ARPA dollars to help them get through this time. And we're hoping that we can get that program funded again, the Child Care Counts program funded at $340 million in this budget. And if that doesn't happen, it's going to have downstream effects on employers all over the state. I mean, Pat, this is what we heard when we went around the state on our roadshow for finance, is we heard from parents, we heard from child care providers, we heard from business owners and workforce development experts that child care is essential to building our workforce and ensuring that we have a workforce for all those organizations. And so given the trend that they've had in this session of refusing to do the things that Governor Evers has already laid out that we believe that can help build our workforce, I'm pretty concerned about it.
Well, and rightly so. And so to follow up on this, there are things that I would say, unfortunately, we've become accustomed to with Republicans not supporting, even though they are things that would be helpful to the workforce, like paid family leave, like helping childcare be more affordable. We understand that there's some kind of a philosophical difference, even though we very much disagree with it. But as I called it in our Up North News editorial, the one that's a real head scratcher for me is them rejecting funding for the second cycle in a row to replace the College of Engineering building at UW-Madison. It's the state's flagship campus. It's the college that is perhaps most competitive, where other Big Ten schools have been expanding. And this isn't just a matter of bringing in students and graduating students. You're essentially deciding the width of the jobs pipeline from your flagship campus into your state. And I know I try never to do this, to put somebody in the other party's shoes, but I ask in all seriousness, Representative McGuire, what were Republicans saying about why they would reject something that Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and so many other business groups support? I am genuinely asking why.
Well, you know, to be honest, it's one of the ones that confuses me as well. From what we heard, that, you know, the simple message that they gave us, well, you know, sometimes some projects don't get funded, and that's just the way it is. But you would imagine that with the amount of pressure that was placed on them, and the amount of communications they had received from major employers, from the business lobby, from other groups that traditionally, I think, you know, would lean to the right, I guess I would say, that you would have think that this would be something that they would deem a priority. And for the life of me, I can't understand why they would not want to fund this. If you think about any of the private companies that would need engineers from now on, you know, if we don't have sufficient engineers, that doesn't mean that their business, you know, stops growing or that they'll stop doing something. That means that they'll have to go out and find people at cost to themselves. They'll have to go out and find people in other states, and they'll have to find a way to get people to want to move to Wisconsin for an engineering job when they already live somewhere else, where they have high compensation somewhere else. I mean, these are well compensated jobs, where they have good benefits, and they have a different, you know, they have a different way of life, where maybe they can get childcare affordably, or they can have paid family leave or things like that. So these companies are going to have to go out of state and spend a lot of money to do that. This is going to be a cost and a burden on them moving forward. And I don't understand why legislative Republicans would A, want to place that on them, and B, want to do so, you know, by restricting, as you said, our jobs pipeline.
And let's keep in mind that what Republicans rejected was a nearly $200 million request by Governor Evers. It would have been accompanied by about $150 million more in private gifts and grants, with no guarantee now that those potential donors are going to be around 2 years from now in the next budget cycle. And that would all be enough. But now when I remind people, these are Republicans who couldn't move fast enough to throw billions of dollars at the Foxconn project. It just makes it that much more reason to think that it's all about spite toward the governor rather than working together on something that would be good for the workforce. But like you said, it's all part of a theme between that, the tech college funding, and other things that I'm still not seeing. I'm literally still not seeing a Republican jobs growth agenda besides tax cuts for the very wealthy.
Yeah, I agree. You know, there was money left over from the governor's building proposal that, you know, one-time money that could be used to help finance a project like this, that Republicans, they simply chose not to do it. It wasn't some, well, we ran out of money, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel here. It was that there was money available. The governor was able to allocate that money. He was able to allocate it for a lot of other projects as well. This wasn't the exclusive building project of the state. They simply chose not to do it. They chose not to do it. And it would have provided hundreds of engineers to the state of Wisconsin.
Here's another thing that I wonder if they've chosen not to do, and if something's actually going to get done. And what I'm talking about is revenue sharing. For folks not familiar with it, for over a century, Wisconsin state government collects so much more revenue, of course, than local units of government can. So state government shares some of that revenue back with counties, cities, towns, villages, so that some vital services can get done. This system, this current system, is broken. And if you're going to fix it, you're going to do it while you have a record budget surplus and kind of put the infrastructure in place to shake things up. Republicans say they want to fix it, but their proposal is a bit of a non-starter with Governor Evers. And I don't like sounding this negative or almost conspiratorial. I'm starting to wonder, Representative McGuire, if the Republican majority actually even wants to fix the revenue sharing formula, or if this, again, is all performative and to say, well, we just couldn't agree on something, so the same broken system is going to stay in place. I don't want to be that negative, but I'm not seeing signs of progress. This is where you get to tell me that you maybe do see signs of progress or have reason for optimism. Because I'm not afraid to be wrong if you think I'm wrong.
Yeah, I do have reasons for optimism, but I'll start off by you and I have both been around Wisconsin politics long enough to know that Republicans have been essentially denying shared revenue increases for a decade plus perhaps. And so I don't know that I would identify it as something that they are often in a rush to fix. But I will say I have noticed that when Governor Evers is able to successfully make an issue something that breaks through to the public, and I was as shocked as anyone that we heard as much about shared revenue as we did from constituents and others after Governor Evers chose to make it a central component of his campaign, that when the governor chooses to make those issues, that Republicans ultimately can get dragged across the finish line. They increased the amount that they were funding in education and healthcare in the past several budgets because Governor Evers was pushing for those things and because he said the bar high, and then they had to try and meet it. And so I'm hopeful that given Governor Evers' very successful and significant communications on shared revenue and why he thinks it's such a priority, that alone can help pull them across the finish line. And I've been pleased to see that Senate Majority Leader Lemmy Hugh has been willing to negotiate and you know, honestly, sit down with the governor and have an earnest conversation about what they'd like to see. So I see signs for optimism.
It certainly seems like Devin Lemahieu, the Senate Republican leader, is a bit more in the negotiating frame of mind compared to the Assembly Speaker, Robin Voss, who says he's done negotiating. But of course, that's not true. when you have a governor from the opposite party, you're constantly negotiating. Because we're, you know, a statewide program, we don't get terribly hyper local into what's happening specifically with Milwaukee, except to note from time to time that this legislature sure does like to punish the state's, you know, largest city, the largest cog in our economic engine, and wants to force through in exchange for a better shared revenue system, forcing local referenda before that tax increase can be passed through. Any ideas to whether that's going to stay and then become a showdown with the governor, or if that can be negotiated one way or the other before this is done?
Yeah, I guess I don't have any specific insight as to whether that's going to leave the bill or not, but I would imagine that that's a key point that the two sides are negotiating on and discussing and trying to find a way to work to a yes. You know, I don't represent Milwaukee, but I'll say, as you mentioned earlier, you know, if you look around the country and you see states that are succeeding and doing well and that are growing, benefiting, a lot of them are investing in their biggest cities and are places that are making sure that their biggest cities are a source of strength. And Wisconsin should do the same. We should be helping Milwaukee succeed so that the rest of the states can succeed.
We've got one comment online through Facebook. Janet is asking, do Republican legislators not want to fund the UW Engineering Building because they want the legislature to have more power over the operation of the university? Again, it's hard to read minds, but you can see where people are thinking this might be coming from.
Yeah, I mean, that's often been one of the things that they do, right, is they try to exert more control over things that they disagree with. I think the repeated and consistent removal of local control for local governments and school boards over time has been a theme I'm sure we're all aware of. And that's of a similar nature. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised if that was ultimately the result.
From the party that always told us that they were for local control and has proven to be anything but. The micromanagement has simply been stunning. I've got less than a minute left, so I've got to ask something on a lighter note. This budget has to be done by June 30th, or, you know, there are delays. There's not a shutdown, but there are delays. What's your confidence in June 30th? In other words, are you and your family making 4th of July plans yet, or are you making sure you still have enough coffee in the office in case you have to run overtime?
A little bit of both. We bought more coffee, but I've still got some tentative plans for July 4th.
Excellent. Tip, thank you. Representative Tip McGuire from Kenosha, member of the Joint Finance Committee. We really appreciate the update. Come back again soon and let us know what's happening there in the big marble building.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you All for right. having me. It's good to see you.
You bet. Have a great day. We will wrap up our conversation here on this Wednesday morning with a reminder that, as always, you can send us your questions to radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And we'll also take your calls in the next segment since we don't have a guest planned. So 844-967-2789. If you have any final feedback before we wrap up our visit today, you're up north.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
A little bit more Tom Jones for his 83rd birthday today. And Janet, we appreciate the comment on airing your question. Glad you appreciate having some Stevie Ray Vaughan on there for the bumper music, and glad that you're listening there from Oak Creek. Thank you very much for that. Studio lines open at 844-967-2789. If you have any thoughts on what you heard either from State Representative Tip McGuire on the Joint Finance Committee or Congressman Mark Bocan earlier in this hour. I don't know how to put this. I'm missing Todd Alba here, Aaron. I mean, this is normally the point where he joins us, and I feel like I've lost a brother here. You know, now that he's moved to afternoons. I mean, normally he's here. He's the perfect foil for the sarcasm that seems to come out in me. You know, by about this time when the second cup of coffee is kicked in, I don't know where we're going to find somebody as sassy to fill our Wednesday hours here.
And then right after that, you'd get to go on his show and talk to Trygve Olsen from the Lincoln Project, and that's always a good time.
I know. I got a nice note from Trygve saying that he's going to miss our conversations here. Here's what I've noticed so far. No invitation from Todd Alba to come on to his new afternoon show. He's still coming here. He'll be back here on Friday morning, but I think we're seeing how this is playing out here.
It's, oh, no. He said he gave me some days that would work. It's just today. Okay. Today is not going to work for him.
Okay, so his people are going to talk to my people, and we're going to figure this out. All right. I'll let you take a look at the phones here while I mention that this is the anniversary in 1965 of the U.S. Supreme Court case, a milestone, Griswold v. Connecticut. The Griswold decision in 1965 led to prohibiting states from criminalizing the use of contraception by married couples. This was a landmark case about privacy rights. In this case, it was privacy rights for married people, but then went on to cover other groups as well, because while the Constitution does not explicitly say something about the right to privacy, it also does not explicitly say anything about airplanes. And yet we have the U.S. Air Force and all of the regulations of flight that come with it. And yet this current Supreme Court, not seeing an explicit right to privacy, used that as a reason to tear down Roe v. Wade and could conceivably go after the Griswold decision, which would break down a whole lot of other rights and privacy rights that we have in this country. So we've all heard about Roe v. Wade, but if you are of a mind, read up on the case of Griswold v. Connecticut and find out where our privacy rights might be in danger more than ever from a right wing that likes to say that they're against government intrusion, but apparently only when it suits them. Back to the subject of the College of Engineering building on the UW-Madison campus, and Wisco Paul is calling in with some thoughts on that. Paul, good morning.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. As far as the engineering building down at the UW, that's backwards thinking by the Republicans, and it's really sad because most companies in this state need engineers, and where else would you rather, excuse me, get them than from the University of Wisconsin? They need to rethink their position there. I don't know if they will, but it's just a sad. I don't know if they hate Madison or what the deal is there, but it's not right. So thanks for taking my call.
You bet, Paul. Have a great day. That's the thing. Is it spite toward the governor? Is it spite toward the university system, toward the city of Madison? We've seen their actions toward Madison. And we've seen their actions toward Milwaukee. And their thinking has always been that they win with their base, which is outside Madison, Milwaukee, if they continue to gin up this animosity between rural and urban Wisconsin. And it's wrong on so many levels. It's not wrong from a crass partisan perspective. Again, it helps you win seats. But when it comes to what you want to do for the entire state, you often hear them say, well, not everybody has to go to college. Well, that's true. But for some people, it is what they want to do. For some parents, it is what they want for their children. And so why wouldn't you want them attending the flagship campus or one of the other campuses of your state rather than going elsewhere? That's the exodus that we are facing right now and have been facing going back to, you know, Act 10 a dozen years ago of people saying this is a state currently under Republican control that does not value education, does not value teachers, and now does not appear to value higher education to the level of which could create jobs, could create the, you know, the jobs pipeline of the future. Now, I have said before, and I'll say again, in my editorial, in our newsletter, I said that the full assembly and the full Senate should overturn this and put that money back in. It could be a case where they want this to pass and they're going to do it on the floor so that they can say all of these assembly Republicans and all of these Senate Republicans voted for it. But I would contend it's too late for that. If that's what they're doing, it's a stunt and they should not be rewarded for it because you've caused all of this consternation now. People wondering what it is you have against Madison. And Chris from Sun Prairie has some thoughts about that. Chris, good morning.
I just wanted to point out that one of the tactics that the Republicans have used for years now is they pass bad legislation all of the time, and then they go home and blame it on Madison. They are the people in Madison who are passing the bad legislation. They come into Madison, and when they pass legislation that people don't like, they go home and blame it on Madison, not themselves, but on Madison. And they are building this hatred against Madison. And I think it's just terrible, and I don't think anybody that's in elected office should be allowed to do something like that. And I hope people outside of Madison hear this and start watching their WISC-I and watching what they're doing. You can actually see them and see what they're doing on WISC-I, and people should really look at it.
They should indeed, Chris. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it, and thank you for listening to the show this morning. I would like to think that at some point, now, again, it's been 12 years since the takeover by Republicans of the legislature in 2010. At some point with more voters, you would think it's going to sink in. Hey, wait a minute. They keep railing against Madison. They are Madison now, these Republican legislators who come from all over the state and meet in Madison. When we continue to compare poorly to the jobs records in Minnesota and neighboring states, when we see revenue leave for Illinois and Michigan and other states because of legal marijuana and so forth, at some point that more voters are going to say, hey, maybe after 12 years or 14 years of watching Wisconsin lose its best and brightest, of even cheesing off the business community for turning down the College of Engineering, maybe these guys aren't up to the job and maybe it's time for somebody else. But they do need to hear more about it, which gets us right back to where we started. And that is why we started Up North News and why folks at Civic Media began this new network of radio stations so that more people around Wisconsin would hear what is actually happening in Madison and in Washington and behind the scenes and be able to better quiz their current elected officials and candidates and perhaps make votes that are motivated less by campaign ads and more by what is actually happening or not happening in Washington and Madison. And with that, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Representative Deb Andraka and Joseph Pecky up tomorrow. Have a great day.